So, G, I've noticed you've been kind of missing in all the groups that we're in, man. You've been silent.
Mate, you've been silent, man. Sometimes you just gotta keep your head below water, you know.
Gabriel.
Oh man. I've been just enough to so no one can say, oh, you didn't come about, but I definitely haven't been chucking anything in the last few days. No way.
What was the bet that you had?
Right.
Was it that Lampard would go before Arteta?
Yeah.
He would outlast Arteta. Yeah, he'd go. Yeah. I said Lampard would go first. Right. And G, so as you mentioned that, this is not very good for the podcast, but Ollie can see it. I'm showing the payment that G made to my account. Can you see it, Ollie?
Yeah.
There you go. Right. Yeah. So it's proof here that shopping for the next couple of weeks is taken care of, courtesy of Chelsea fan Gabriel.
Where are you shopping? That should be that 1 week.
Listen, it's lockdown times, bro. Money's hard. Money's tight right about now. That £50 was welcome. Thank you very much. Before we go any further, do you want to make any more bets? Because I'm on a roll now. So do you want to bet about your next manager being sacked before Arteta? Because I'll take it.
Man, you know what? Six weeks ago, I was so confident, you know. I thought Arteta was a god of sure.
I ain't going to lie. So did I. This is the Football Fans Podcast. Myself, Jordan Jarrett, by alongside Chelsea fan Gabriel, Tottenham fan Ollie. Marvin might join us. He might not. But we will be joined later in the show by German football expert Raphael Honigstein, as well as the Anfield Raps, Neil Atkinson. We're going to talk about Liverpool a bit later on and what the hell is happening there. But only one place to start. The big news of the week. Yeah,
is
man.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, it's bigger than Spurs winning 4-1 away. Where was it? Huddersfield?
Wickham.
Yeah. I mean, it's just beating that as the main story of the week. Lampard's out. Got told to F off. By Roman Abramovich.
Jeez.
Gabriel, it's your week this week. Fair or harsh?
No, it's fair. That's.
I know. I'm surprised as well.
that's the standard at Chelsea, and but also not even just at Chelsea. I think he would have got sacked at most clubs for how we were actually performing. So, I mean, like, I'm disappointed that it didn't work out. Really, really disappointed. But I can't say, I mean, I think I said it last time, like, the writing was on the wall. And I think more than anything, he probably could have regained some kind of form and, you know, and climbed us up to a certain level of the table. But I haven't seen anything to say that he was showing the signs that he could be an elite level manager. And that therein lies the problem. So why give somebody a longer chance just to kind of hit, you know, a little below your standard rather than a lot below your standard. Mm. And I think that's what was also happening. But also, if I look at that Leicester game, oh man, it was
bad. Like,
so, like, if I mean 2-0, lucky to kind of get away with that. I mean, some of like the structure of the team, like when we were being countered, the way we were so open and like, I mean, I'm not, you know. That you got managers like Sarri or Pep who tell people exactly where to stand and they know where to stand so that certain things, like we were just like, it was just like part in the Red Sea every single time they attacked. And, you know, he's done a lot of good stuff for us. I mean, last year was a good season, but there was a new level to get to this year and he hasn't really demonstrated that he can meet that level. In fact, everything that's happened, we've gone backwards on. And, if you think of it, when all the flaws that you say about Lampard have been the same at Derby, same first season at Chelsea, even same second season, you'd say he didn't really know his first 11. He had a dip around Christmas time in all of the seasons that he's had. And his defences have all been quite weak. And, you know, last season you gave him the benefit of the doubt and said, actually, well, you know, he didn't really get to buy anyone. This was just a side that was kind of put together. But this year, and I'm not having all these, like, you've got Harry Redknapp and Jamie coming on Sky and saying, well, he didn't buy those players, he didn't buy him. When in the summer, we were all told the only reason why they came was because of Lampard's charm and he was the one that got them in. So you can't have it both ways. So So yeah, I mean, I'll let Ollie get in because I know he's desperate to.
Oh yeah, sure. we both got a lot to say. Yeah, yeah. But overall, you think it was fair?
I think it was fair, and it was coming.
Ollie, G mentioned that Leicester game. I don't think the damning thing about that game so much was, I mean, maybe they're interlinked, but how poor Chelsea were. It was the fact that watching that game, Leicester won that game. Was it 2-0 in the end? Was it 3-0? Yeah. It was 2-0. And I think they were in second gear. I don't think they even played that well and they were so comfortable. But something I'm hearing about with Lampard as well, which is really annoying me, is people are saying, oh, you know, it's counter to the, was he promoted to that job too early? It's the, oh, if that job comes up, you got to take it. You got to take it. You got to take it. And I'm a little bit like, I don't know about you, Ollie, but I'm thinking if there's one job in world football that's going to come round every 18 months, it's the Chelsea job. So no, you haven't got to take it. Did you think that where he was, going back to his time at Derby, it was a job that you'd be stupid to turn down? Or do you think in hindsight, maybe, and we'll talk about it a bit later on as well, the more Steven Gerrard route or Joey Barton route of going away, lower leagues, and then building yourself up, was what he should have really done to build up to the Chelsea job? Because I don't know where he goes now. I don't know where Lampard goes.
Yeah, it's a hard one because most people would take the Chelsea job if it came along, because even knowing what we know about Chelsea, that you're going to get sacked sooner rather than later, the fact still remains that you're going to get a nice payoff and you can sit easy for a couple of months or maybe even a couple of years and wait for the next job to come along. He's going to get a nice payoff. No one's going to turn that offer down, and Tuchel hasn't turned it down. You can guarantee that. I mean, they've only given Tuchel 18 months, haven't they?
But isn't the difference, Ollie,
which says a lot? Because
it does.
I think that they know full well that this thing with Tuchel. If you look at Tuchel's history, Tuchel hasn't. He's ended both of his last two jobs have ended acrimoniously. So there's every chance that this is going to end badly for him as well. But everyone knows where they stand. Tuchel's going into that job knowing
he knows what it is. Yeah, I want to get to Tuchel a bit later on, but stick with you, Ollie. I guess the difference between someone like Tuchel taking the job and Lampard for me is that Lampard is seen as the greatest Chelsea player ever. And as a legend, over the next 2 or 3 or 4 or 5, 6 years, there'll be 2 or 3 other opportunities to get that job. So why not spend from Derby, get Derby promoted, take another job. And then that, do you know what I mean? I thought at the time it was quite stupid to take the job because, as you said, you know at Chelsea, if you don't win the league, and even then, you're going to get sacked. So where does Lampard go now? That was ultimately, I'm assuming, his dream job. He got the dream job, been sacked, and he's still early in his career. It just seemed like a really stupid decision based on the trajectory of a career to take at that time.
Yeah, but then, you know, it's the same as, I don't know, for instance, a Brendan Rodgers, for instance, going to Liverpool after Swansea. Many people would have said, or many people did say, that he wasn't right for that job. A lot of Liverpool fans weren't happy because they didn't think he was a big enough name. But he still took it, and he nearly won the league for them. But then he had to rebuild his career and go to Celtic, and maybe that's what Lampard's going to have to do. There's rumours already that he might end up, rock up at Celtic and he could revive his career there. But it's a difficult one because we've seen throughout history, George, that this never happens, does it? That players take the sensible route of building themselves up gradually before they get the big job. You remember Paul Ince got the big job at Blackburn, didn't he? When you were thinking, well, you know, you should maybe stay learning your craft and learning the game before you go to Blackburn. And it didn't end up well for him. I remember Jimmy Floyd Hasselbaink when he was doing well. Was it at Burton?
Yeah,
and he took the QPR job.
He's gone back now as well.
And he's gone back to Burton now. When you think to yourself, well, you know, you've taken them up two divisions. Why not see if you can cut it in the Championship with Burton, where the pressure's off, where anything that you do there is going to be seen as a success because of the fact that you've taken.
Oh, Wally's connection's gone there.
Yeah.
So this is what happens, you know. Managers do take these jobs, but managers take these jobs and they back themselves as well, Jordan. And that's the thing as well. This is the nature of football. The nature of football is that managers don't go to jobs thinking, well, you know, I'm not going to take that. What if it goes wrong? They back themselves to go there and do a job and make and 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 succeed. So that's the nature of football. It's always going to be the way. It's not just about the money. I think there is a money element to it. I think, but I actually think that there is the element that people always think that they're going to, you know, that they're going to go and they're going to make a success of it.
I actually don't. I mean, all banter aside, and obviously my team's Arsenal, so I'm loving it that he got sacked, and obviously I made some money out of it as well. But
that aren't you?
Oh yeah, hell yeah. But that aside, I actually wouldn't have sacked him. I wouldn't have sacked him because I saw enough in glimpses over his, was it 18 months he's been there? I saw enough in those glimpses to make me think there's a good manager there. Now, I understand why he was sacked. The remit clearly was, we expect a title challenge. And you could argue, are they far off a title challenge or not? It's on table-wise, it looks like it. But in a weird season, 3-4 games from now, they could be back in that top four again. So I'm not sure this year, if you are ninth, that means you're out of the title race. But what's the Chelsea fan base generally saying? And are you seeing a lot of emotion over logic being applied to how they feel about it?
It split really, really raw, where there are people who say he never should have been sacked and you can't treat a legend like that. And then you've got the other side where people are saying he didn't get the result and people have been calling for him to be sacked in December. There have been people that have been calling for him to be sacked since last season.
The cup final, I heard a lot of Chelsea fans saying,
It really is. There really is this big divide. And you probably know it from Arsenal, between, like, I guess what people might call the fan-going, fans and the online fans. And the online fans have been on Lampard for a long, long time. But I would say I disagree with your point about the seeing a good manager in there. I've seen a decent manager in there.
I was going to ask you next. Is
not
he good?
A Chelsea level manager in there.
Okay.
I saw some. I mean, tactically, I did see some good performances. I mean, I know Ollie didn't really like it, you know, him running around at the Tottenham Stadium. But tactically, that was a really good performance from him. And last season, in a lot of big games, he seemed to find solutions and ways to kind of win. Last season, actually. But this season, Jordan, he has not beat a team in the top 10. Like, that is damning. With a squad, that is much better. So it's almost like we've actually regressed.
Yeah.
In that sense. I was never calling for him to be sacked. If he had stayed until the end of the season and went, it wouldn't have been a big thing. But I don't. But, like, it's like that marriage where it's an average marriage. You're never going to be completely happy. Do you stay in it for the kids or do you move on? And I don't think they've moved on early, and it's worked for our club. And Lampard knows that. So this pity party that he's getting a bit online, like, he's being really harshly treated. I mean, he's actually been treated better than a lot of other managers.
True that. Do you think, though, he'll know the nature of Chelsea managers and that he's been there as a player, he knows what happens. He'd have gone into that job knowing if he's not cutting the mustard, he's going to get sacked. But do you think, I mean, obviously you don't know him, but do you think he will be carrying a little bit of feeling about it? I mean, mid-season, off the back of a win, okay, it was Luton. Do you think he'll be thinking, you know what? F Roman. F Chelsea. I'm a Chelsea legend. And I'm not doing great, but I should get a little bit more respect and time. Or do you think he just thinks, you know what? Fair enough.
Oh, absolutely. You only have to look at what he did in his press conference last week to the reporter, who, for me, didn't really do anything wrong. Like, I went to look at his previous tweets and was like, what did he actually say? And that is the thing. Lampard does have a spiky side to him. Like, I think the media kind of picture him up as this darling, which is kind of what gets people annoyed, and maybe goes, his detractors go too far on criticizing him. But he has a spiky, almost, I don't know, insecure side about him. Probably going back to the days of when he was called Fat Frank and all that type of stuff. I looked at what the journalist said. It was a pure tactical analysis of how we got torn apart against Leicester, how Leicester would counter us easily, how Leicester seemed to have a structure and we didn't. That's totally fair. Like, a journalist's job to say that? And George, you know, I'm not one to defend the journalist. And it's kind of like, okay, why are you going for him? And Jose went for journalists all the time, for example, right? But Jose would go for them from a position of strength. He'll be top the league and tell them, you're chatting shit. But you can't go, you've lost all these games in a row, I mean, you're there trying to pick fights. Like, get your team on the pitch, win the game. It's funny that when you actually watched the game against Leicester, you saw his body language. It was all just folding your arms. I wish you showed some of that fight with the you show with the journalist, like to the players when they're on the side, when you're on the sidelines. So yeah, to answer your question, I do think he probably is feeling a little bit disgruntled by this. He'll get over it, but I do think he's probably like a little bit sore.
Ollie, is he a good manager? Did you see enough in there?
Can we just before that question, George? G's Mike, I don't know, or G when he's talking sounds a bit kind of. You know, I don't know if it's just me who's hearing that, but it just sounds a bit
like you're in an airport.
Yeah, sounds a bit poppy and kind of.
Any better now? All right, let me take the headphones out. See if that's better.
All right, cool. I'll come to you, Ollie, while G's doing that.
Any better now?
No, it's worse.
No, that's worse. No. When you just messed around with it, it sounded a bit better.
Yeah, it did.
Actually.
It did. You touched something on your headset, and it.
Yeah.
Better now?
Yeah, that sounds all right. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a bit better. Cool. Yeah, yeah.
See how it go with that. Sorry, go on, George.
That's right. Do you see a good manager, or do you think it was, you know, didn't see enough to kind of really give him that extra rest of the season?
Well, funny enough, I went back on a text that I sent to you, Jordan, on October the 7th. It was after the transfer window.
Ah, receipts. I love it.
Yeah, it was after the transfer window had closed. And you said, okay, transfer window's closed. You can't keep it off for any longer now. You need to tell me who you think is going to be in the top four. And I said to you at the time, I don't think Chelsea are going to make it. I don't think. And what I said, I actually said, October 7th it is, Lampard hasn't got the experience. The squad is bloated. He doesn't know his best side. I think it's going to end in tears for him. And that, basically, I think that sums up what I think about Lampard. He's a decent manager, but I don't think he had the experience to be the Chelsea manager. And especially when they started throwing money at it again, then I think he was in trouble. But I think there's more of a longer history of where it went wrong for Lampard as well. In that, I think the alarm bell started ringing last season for the Chelsea hierarchy. It wasn't just about what's been going on in this bad run he's had. I think if you're the Chelsea hierarchy, let's not forget, there's a lot of people who keep saying about Lampard that he hasn't been given the opportunity because he didn't have the players last season. Chelsea had a good side last season. I'm not buying that at all. Chelsea had a good side last season. I'm not saying they had a side good enough to win the league, but they had a decent enough side. But Chelsea not only got, you know, not only finished in the top four, but they finished in fourth place. They let Man United come from nowhere to finish third above them. Their run towards the end of the season was terrible. They got absolutely eviscerated by Bayern Munich in the Champions League, 7-1 on aggregate. They also went into that cup final and they lost to Arsenal in a game that they were in control of and a game that they basically went in front in, and then they somehow managed to lose that game. The thing is as well with this whole thing with the FA Cup final is to lose to Arteta once is careless. To lose to him on Boxing Day when Arteta was on the kind of run that would have got him sacked at Chelsea, to me, that left Lampard as a dead man walking. From that moment on, I don't think he had any... There was nowhere left to go. There was no confidence there. The way they lost to Arsenal on a dreadful run.
We were awful, yeah.
You know, that was... I mean, for a Chelsea side to play that badly against one of their local rivals was pretty shocking to me. And I didn't think there was any way back for him.
And Arsenal
weren't even that good, no. And Arsenal still tried to give Chelsea a chance back into the game in the last 5 minutes. So that was how bad they were. But I just feel with Lampard, yes, he's a good manager, but I think he needs to learn. He needs to learn how to being a good manager isn't just about, you know, coming up with who's going to be in the team, or whatever. It's about managing big, high-profile players. And I think that Lampard was obviously comfortable when he's comfortable dealing with people like Reece James and Mason Mount and Tammy Abraham. And, you know, but when he actually had to deal with the bigger names that came in the summer, I think he was struggling. I think he was struggling to get through to people like Havertz, and Werner looks like he's lost all confidence. So, yeah, I just think he wasn't able to bridge that gap, basically, to manage big-name players.
Let's move it forward now. It's been announced in the last couple of hours that German Thomas Tuchel has been confirmed as the Chelsea manager. I'm not going to call him the German football expert because that's disrespect. Football expert who specialises in German football, I think is more accurate. Football writer and broadcaster, Rafa Honigstein. Rafa, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing fine, Jordan. You know, you can call me anything you want, on air, off air. You know that.
When people call you German football, like, nah, Rafa is more than German football. Let's have it right. Are you well, sir?
I'm good. You?
Yeah, man, we're good, man. I'm more delighted. You wouldn't have heard, but Gabriel, our Chelsea fan here on the call, we had a bet pre-season that my manager would last longer than his manager. And yeah, he had to pay up today. So I'm in a very, very good mood.
You'd think Jordan's just had a kid or something.
Listen, lockdown times, I told you, the work's low. So I'll take that £50 all day. We were speaking there, Rafa, about Lampard and obviously him going. It's been announced now that, is it Thomas Tuchel or Tuchel?
Tuchel.
Yeah.
Tuchel. George's never going to get that.
I'll do my best. He's obviously in the door. One of the things, Rafa, that people say a lot that kind of makes me a little bit annoyed is when people say, oh, this person's Spanish, so they should go to that club because they've got two or three Spanish players, they speak Spanish, and he can get it going. And when I hear that kind of talk, it makes me think of, like, I was at a workplace like once years and years ago, and my work colleague was white, and he was like, "You should meet my friend. She's black because you two will get along really, really well. You two are really, really cool." And I thought to myself, "Really?" And I'm hearing similar rhetoric now around Thomas Tuchel. The idea that because he's German, and you know, Chelsea have a few German players, that is the answer to getting those German guys going. Should that be one of the top two reasons, if you were the Chelsea owner, as to why you would have brought in Thomas Tuchel?
No, I think that isn't the reason. I think that Chelsea were looking for a German-speaking manager, not so much because of those two big Germans in the squad, or three if we include
Pulisic
and Rudiger, but more to do with the type of coaching that German coaches are known for. Now, they're not all the same. There are big differences between Klopp and Tuchel, and Hasenhüttl, who's Austrian, but of course speaks German, or a version thereof, Nagelsmann. But what they all share, I think, is a very strong dedication to tactical work, to improving players, to not necessarily be checkbook managers, to see themselves as coaches rather than managers in the more British sense. And I think that is something that's attractive, not just to Chelsea, but to a lot of clubs who believe, I think, increasingly that the real way to add value as a coach, apart from winning, of course, which is the most important thing, is to improve your players and take a player who's a £20 million player and turn him into a £60 or £100 million player. That kind of money that you can add to a club that way cannot be added in any other way. And I think German managers, and Klopp, of course, is the best example of this, the most successful one, have shown that they can do that. And I think that is the big attraction. The fact that they can share the same language, the fact that there is a belief that Tuchel knows maybe how to push these guys' button because maybe it's easier to communicate for him than for, let's say, an Italian or a Spanish guy, might be one of the small considerations, but it's more to do with the style rather than the language.
So of the three Germans that were touted for a couple of months now, Tuchel, Ranić, and who was the third one?
Nagelsmann.
Oh, wow. Nagelsmann. Who would you have appointed if you were the Chelsea owner?
I like all three of them. I think all three of them are brilliant. But Chelsea only had one viable option if they wanted to make that decision right now. I should say two viable options. Nagelsmann was never going to leave Leipzig halfway through the season. There was also not necessarily a real guarantee that he would leave in the summer, because Leipzig already indirectly said to anyone, don't come for him. He's got no release clause. You know, it's not going to happen. So Chelsea would have been in a position where if they picked Nagelsmann, they wouldn't find out maybe until August or July. And by that time, they miss out on others. So Rangnick would have been available. Rangnick was approached. But I think they wanted somebody maybe who in the eyes of Abramovich specifically had maybe a slightly more glamorous factor attached to it, or a bit more, more image. You know, Rangnick would have been a very, very smart option, but they only offered Rangnick a temporary job, which he wasn't prepared to do. And with Tuchel, he initially wasn't prepared to come either in the summer. Sorry, immediately. He wanted to come in the summer, taking a bit of a break along with his coaching staff for personal reasons. But they convinced him with the way that Chelsea often can by saying, this is a big opportunity. You better take it now because who knows what happens in 3 months. And ultimately, that's what happened. But I would have been happy as a Chelsea supporter with any of those three. I think they all could have done a brilliant job. I think Rangnick would have perhaps been the smartest solution as far as working within a structure of Chelsea's concern, because this is a guy who's worked, let's see, I think 14 years for a billionaire or a couple of billionaires, understanding what these kind of guys want and how you have to kind of bring them into your decision-making. But Tuchel was the favorite of Roman, I think, in particular. And he got
as well. Gabriel, let me ask you, as the Chelsea fan here, we've got a full house, by the way. We're going to come to Neil Atkinson from the Anfield Wrap in a little bit to talk about Klopp and Liverpool. And Marvin's woken up. Good morning, Marvin. You all right?
How you doing, George? You all right?
We are good. We are good. We are good.
Good to see you, Neil. How you doing, fella?
Really, really well. I only want to talk about Rafa's hoodie.
I was coming to that. I was coming to that, actually. We'll get to that in a little bit.
Contractual obligations.
Gabriel, let me ask you, as a Chelsea fan, how much do you care about the constant changing of cultures that come with the different managers that you've had under the Roman era? So you've had to deal with the Jose style of football and what that brings. You had the Conte style and what that brings, AVB and what that brings, Lampard and what he was bringing. And now you're going into, I'm assuming, a more German style approach. As a Chelsea fan, do you give a damn about the constant changing of what your club's iteration is? Or would you like to have a manager that actually, for 4 or 5 years, this is the style of football, these are the kind of players, this is what we're about?
No, I don't really care. As you know, I care more about the success which comes with it. But I think we probably need to broaden out what is considered.
Oh, we've lost you, G. No, lost you. We lost you. Play with your thing, and I'll come back to you in a second. Come back to you in a second. Oh, there you are.
Is any better?
Yeah, we got you. Yeah. We got you there.
I'm more worried about the success that can come for the managers that we have. But I think what I would like to see is success broadened out a little bit. So success not just meaning trophies, success meaning getting value for money out of players, success meaning getting players from our academy. And so in that sense, that's the only problem that I would say that's come from the method that we've had, is that the changing of managers and the short-term thinking around that has meant that the lack of continuity has meant that some of our young players have either had to suffer or leave to succeed. But apart from that, I wouldn't mind a manager every couple of years, as long as there is an idea, like a thread amongst the club. And if we need a tactical shake up every couple of years, you'll probably find that most managers do that anyway. Klopp has changed his tactics. Pep has changed his tactics to adapt to the league. Most good managers, Fergie used to change his tactics and his backroom staff and things every couple of years. So the fact that we changed the head coach doesn't really matter too much to me, as long as there is a thread and a continuity within the club.
Neil, let me come to you as the neutral to some degree on this call, because me, Marvin and Ollie absolutely hate Chelsea, so we're not going to say anything nice about them. And
Rafa's the lovely lads. Lovely lads, every single one of them. Whatever Matt said about them. Former manager of Carcadian, supporter of the Conservative Party. Go on, what?
Oh dear. as an outsider, what's your view? Do you think the sacking, first of all, was harsh? And Do you welcome the introduction to the Premier League of Thomas Tuchel? Do you think he will add to the Premier League? As Rafa said, I think he would.
I think first and foremost on the sacking, I think that it's a classic sacking where, whether or not it's harsh, the manager in question almost certainly shouldn't have been appointed in the first place when he was. And then I think he scrapes by with the very bare minimum last season, the very bare minimum. It's worth saying that Chelsea, in front of their own supporters, because it was back when we could watch football in person, Chelsea are dreadful against an excellent Bayern Munich, but are absolutely dreadful at Stamford Bridge against an excellent Bayern Munich, and are absolutely undone in a manner that is quite undignified, to be quite honest with you. They get knocked out of the Cup semi-final against a poor Arsenal side, having gone 1-0 up, and they just about scrape fourth in the end with a really low points haul. So I think he was fortunate to get the start of this season. The thing that mitigates this season, but why you make the change you make when they make it, is because, in a sense, because it is so close at the top, they're not that far adrift from anybody, really, and it won't take much to turn it around. So you could make that argument for Lampard, but you can also make that argument for making the change. You can say, well, it doesn't take that much for a new manager to come in, get much more out of this terrific group of players and go from there. So I think it's part of modern football. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I think it's one of those sackings that everyone's just got to go, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely understandable. Could he have been given a bit longer? Maybe, but broadly speaking, I think if you're going to do it, you know, arguably you should have done it 2 weeks ago, but I think if you're going to do it, you do it now, and you don't wait until everything's gone for the season. You do it now. Give him some time to get in for the Champions League games in the last 16. He's still in the cup. Nothing's gone in terms of top four. So if you do it now, there's still a season to salvage.
Mm. Marvin, briefly yourself. I mean, one of the things that I've noticed as well is that sections of the media, Ollie was saying earlier on, you wouldn't have heard it, but there's been a lot, I think maybe it was G actually, was saying there's a lot of sympathy towards Lampard and poor little Frank Lampard, and he's never going to work again.
Why are you asking Marv this? You know what he's
going to do. I'm teeing him up. What's been your reaction, just briefly, Marvin, to the sacking and to the appointment?
The appointment of Tuchel? I mean, I'm with Neil, right? And it pains me to say I'm with a Liverpool fan, but I think we talked about it before. He should have never got the job. The only reason why he got the job is because Chelsea thought they couldn't get someone that would be willing to do a season with a transfer ban. He went in there, he pitched his "I can look after the youth" angle. They went for it. Oh, Chelsea boy, all good. I think the appointment is probably the best that's available. And I heard what Raf was saying as I came in, you know, they said now or never. And, you know, everyone wants to manage in the Prem at some point in their career. So I get that. And I agree with the media. I mean, I kind of saw it. Obviously, it's all football family, right? But I kind of saw it when Jamie Redknapp was commenting on a defeat. Who did you lose to, G?
Leicester.
When you lost to Leicester.
He was very nice. He was very nice.
Shockingly nice. To the point where I was messaging people going, he doesn't want to miss out on the Sunday roast round at Lamps's, right? So, I mean, I thought you can see it, you know, I think his professionalism as a player has bought him a lot of leeway. And, you know, I saw a few comments done by Paul Merson, and you think, if that was a foreign manager, or even worse, a black manager, there is no way that Paul Merson would be asking for more time. Chelsea opened the checkbook in the summer, and Lampard couldn't get the best out of the players, right? Now, whether those players are good enough remains to be seen, but I think to Neil's point, it was a bad appointment, and things weren't looking great, right? I mean, even the win against Fulham had 10 men, and they were really scraping around there. So, yeah, I'm not surprised, and it doesn't surprise me that the media have sort of backed him quite a bit.
On the media point on Sky, I think that Sky's football coverage on the whole is terrific. I think they get a hell of a lot right. So I just want to put that out there first. But I think Sky have had a duty of care to Redknapp that they've actually failed in. They should have been exposing him to have to talk about Lampard. And they shouldn't have done that to him. They shouldn't have put him in a situation where he's doing poetry. They should have thought, this is going to do damage to this fella's reputation, because he's not going to be able to be as objective as he at least would try to be most of the time if he's talking about quite literally a relation in the immediate aftermath of a football match that's taken place. This isn't the same as the WhatsApp group stuff with Solskjaer, where the United lads are all in it together. You know, it's one thing to have a friendship across football, but it's another thing entirely to have a blood relation and to go to him straight after a game wherein there is an argument around him losing his job and go, Jamie, what do you think? Should your relation still be in a job? Sky have got a duty of care there to not put Redknapp in the position, because you can't do right for doing wrong. Because if he says, well, to be honest with you, if we all acknowledge that he's been shite, hasn't he, this season, then he can't say that, because it caused absolute murder and that'd be the back page story. But the flip side is he's trying to be sound. He's trying to be a good person, Redknapp. He's trying to be a good family member, and he can't do that and be a good professional at the same time, in the same moment. So he shouldn't be put in a position where he's got to pick between the two.
But Neil, surely he's got he can stand up and go, I don't think I'm right for this, right? I agree
with that. I think that's really fair. He should also be able to declare that and say that. But it might be that, you know, for all we know, Frank could be messaging him going, Jamie, do me a favour, make sure you're doing the post-match at Leicester. Do you know what? But for all of that sake, that's why you have an, you know, Jamie's the one who's got the emotional attachment and the emotional moment in this. Sky haven't. Sky can pick who they want to do the post-match stuff. Mm. It's not like Redknapp played for Leicester or Chelsea. He played for neither Leicester nor Chelsea, and yet there he is, so we can talk about Frank.
Yeah, I hear you, but on the flip side, I reckon if Gary Neville was commentating on the England football team and Phil Neville was shite, Gary Neville would say Phil Neville's been shite. Do you know what I mean? I think at the end of the day, as a pundit, I think you're right. He has got a duty of care to say, look, this is not right for me. I don't fancy it. But once you've done it, we as the audience expect honesty, right?
And we can laugh our heads off as well. But I just think that I wouldn't put someone in a position where it's very easy to mock them.
Ollie, where's Lampard going now? Because I'm hearing talk about he could go to Newcastle because Steve Bruce might be going tonight. They lost again. He could go to Celtic. He could go to this. I'm thinking Crystal Palace next season. I'm thinking, really?
Why? I don't know why you're so unconvinced that he will get another job in the game. He'll rock up somewhere very soon. I think that, you know, he hasn't. Listen, losing the Chelsea job isn't ruinous to anyone's career, is it? We see they've got such a roll call of managers.
But hang on. All the guys they've sacked previously have had success prior. They've had at least something. Do you know what I mean? Before they got sacked at Chelsea, AVB had relative success before Chelsea. Conte. Ancelotti
to the playoffs, George.
Oh, come on, G. Whereas Lampard hasn't got he's got nothing bad to lean on. So I'm thinking, if he does get a Celtic or a Newcastle, that's the most obvious for me example of favoritism towards an ex-England legend.
No, I think that he'll rock up somewhere where there'll be someone will want a manager like him who can bring through young players, who can give them, you know, the guidance that they need to go from being kind of potential to being decent. Well, whether we're talking about Premier League or whether, I can't see him going back down to the Championship actually, but then, you know, I think that there's enough there that he can revive his career somewhere where, or, you know, maybe it will be in Scotland. Many managers have done it before Lampard, have gone on to, you know, revive their careers. As I said earlier, Rodgers ended up doing that. Rodgers, he went to Liverpool. He got the job before his time. He'd only been at Swansea. And there's a good reason to say that he should never have been given the Liverpool job. Having said that, he nearly took them to the league. But in the end, he proved he wasn't good enough. But he ended up reviving his career at Celtic. So, you know, it's not beyond the realms of possibility that Lampard might end up at Celtic and revive his career there.
I mean, Rafa, in Germany, you guys have a reputation of giving young managers a chance at relatively high levels, from what I've kind of seen on the outside. Would you applaud, say, you know, Roy Hodgson? I think he's on his last year of his contract this season, and he's, what, 75 years old now? Would you, as someone that comes from a culture where you are happy to take risks with coaches, would you applaud, like, a Crystal Palace, say, next year, employing a Frank Lampard? Or do you think now he's got to go back to the Championship, learn the nuts and bolts, and build himself up to a Premier League job?
It's not easy to answer. I think, you know, in the past, Frank Lampard would have found it easy to get jobs in the Bundesliga, because what matters was not so much who you had coached and what you had done, but how much you had done as a player. And because of his personality and his status in the game a lot of clubs will have automatically thought, okay, he must be a good manager. But in 2021, it's a little bit different. I mean, the young managers who get chances, like Tuchel, like Nagelsmann, they weren't players at all. But they got a chance because they already had 10 years of coaching under their belt at youth level. And people at the club were so smart to see, okay, this guy had never coached the seniors before, but I've seen what he does with the under-19s, and this guy understands football. Even though he's very young and inexperienced, I'm taking a risk on him because of his coaching pedigree. So with Lampard, I'm not sure he really falls into that category. It's almost you appoint him because of the name rather than the substance. Mm. So I'm not sure I would applaud Crystal Palace. I would applaud them if they'd done the due diligence and speak to a lot of players and coaching staff who would have seen Lampard at work. That's another thing I just want to briefly mention. The problem we have here in this country is we work really in the dark, because we either have very good sources from the training ground who tell us what's really going on, but even that is through the prism of these players, and some of them get on with the manager and some don't. But we cannot see what it is they're actually doing. In Germany, at least, you can still see coaches, even the best of them, even a Guardiola, at least once a week, taking training and seeing what is that they're actually doing. And it helps you to evaluate if this is just a guy who blows the whistle and says, okay, 11v11, half an hour, then we go to have a shower. Or if this is a guy who brings real tactical, innovative ideas to the table. So I'm not in a position to tell you if Lampard does. Unfortunately, the reports that filtered back suggested that he wasn't quite helping the team enough individually and collectively to improve and to progress. And if anything, there was a regression this year, and that's why Chelsea pulled the plug.
We hear about the reputation of Tuchel at his previous two clubs.
You're feeling under pressure to get the pronunciation right.
Well, Rafa schooled me earlier on, so I've kind of got to get it right now. You know what I mean? Thank you very much. The reputation is that he falls out with his clubs. And from what I've seen from the outside is his issue isn't so much managing down, it's managing up. A, is that fair? And secondly, is this a good fit in that sense with Chelsea?
I think, you know, you go, and maybe Neil might beg to differ here, and maybe Klopp is the big exception to the rule here, but you go through the best managers in the game and they all have some issues. They all have something that is a little bit difficult to deal with. That's what makes them so special. You know, they're incredibly driven. They're sticklers for details. They don't suffer fools gladly. It's their way or the highway. And often they fall out with people because people cannot do what they want them to do, or they disagree. And these people get left behind and there's a big fallout. So Tuchel is not unique in that. He is quite volatile. He's quite combustible. He's had problems with people upstairs. He's also had problems within the dressing room when players just couldn't take it anymore because it was so demanding, so exhausting. And when he felt that people weren't pulling their weight, it got a little bit personal and relationships got difficult. He hasn't been at a club long enough, with the exception of Mainz, before the dressing room got to the point where they sort of collectively said, no more Tuchel, because there was still enough coaching substance and enough positive impact on the players that they kind of put up with it. But he's not unique in that respect. Guardiola is very similar. The big difference with Guardiola now is that he's working with a club that he basically chose the people who employ him rather than the other way around. So that helps you a lot not to fall out with anyone. Tuchel is different. It is going to be fascinating to see if he can do it at Chelsea, where things are always political, always fraught. There's always tension. You're never quite sure who's in charge, who can you talk to. But I think Chelsea go into this with their eyes very open, and they've said to themselves, we will take all this on board because the immediate footballing improvement that this guy will bring, almost guaranteed, is worth all the hassle. Mm. And I think, you know, Chelsea are not known for long-term projects. If Tuchel can do a really good job for 2.5 years and then everything is over after that, I think Chelsea would be quite happy with that. So I don't think they see it necessarily as such a big issue.
G, finally on Chelsea, who's more to blame for failures, harsh, but the non-success so far of Havertz and Timo Werner? Was that Lampard's tactical nous, his positioning, his management of the teams? Or do you look at those two players and think you guys need to do better?
I think you always have to, the manager always bears the ultimate responsibility. That's why the job's there. I think if I look at Timo Werner, he started quite well, but was still struggling. Even when he was scoring early doors, he had quite a good record. I think it was like 5 and 10. But you could see he was struggling to adapt. And I think there were times where Lampard could have took him out of the firing line and played a Giroud, or, you know, played a Hudson-Odoi and just give him a bit of time to acclimatise. But he played him every... And maybe Lampard thinking he was managing someone like himself, where if he was going through a bad run, he would work his way through it. Mm. But I don't think Werner was ready for that. And it was similar with Havertz as well. It was starting to work with Havertz up until the point that he got COVID. His form was actually started to increase slightly, not to the extent where he, say, £70 million player, but definitely to the point where he was looking better. But then when he came back from COVID, he was never the same, and he was terrible. And he was like left out there almost like to die, not to be dramatic. So, yes, obviously there's all individual responsibility, but I think Lampard plays a big role in actually diminishing their confidence, which kind of goes on to the performance. And I say this, and George, you know, I love Lampard, so I'm not like the Lampard out guy. Like, but I could think, just thinking about it objectively, he has to take responsibility for their form and confidence. I would hate it if now, you know, Tuchel came in and it turned around, because it'll make him look even worse. But I suspect that he actually might get a better tune out of him.
Rafa, just super briefly, what's the view from Germans and in Germany about those two players' form? Do they look at Lampard as a big, bad, crap coach that's ruining our talent? Or are they getting criticised for their form?
I think it's neither, Jordan. Okay. I think people are hoping that these guys will do well, but they haven't got enough insight and don't see Chelsea that regularly to understand if it's the coach's fault or if it's the league or if the players are not trying hard enough. And these are also not quite superstars. I mean, Werner is a regular in the national team, but he played at Leipzig before, a team that doesn't have the biggest fan base in the world. Havertz is a young kid coming through Leverkusen, a club that doesn't have a big fan base. So it's sort of the equivalent, if you will, of, let's say, maybe Jack Grealish and, I don't know, Declan Rice going abroad and maybe struggling. And you're thinking, you know, what is England saying about that? I mean, I'm not sure they would say so much about it. They'd be watching it, but it isn't that big a deal just yet.
Okay, let's go to Liverpool. I had Natasha Neal on the pod a couple of weeks ago. She made a bold claim pre-season that Arsenal would finish in the top five, I think she said. And I got her one last week on the last pod.
What division?
Wow. Oh, okay. All right, okay. I'll let that one go.
Just a friendly joke.
And I asked her, started by asking her, Tash, what's going on? So I'm going to ask you the same question. Liverpool, what's going on?
I think there's a lot going on in one sense, and in another sense, it's not all that complicated. There's a massive issue at the heart of the defence. It doesn't bear me banging on about it because everybody has, but ultimately Liverpool have currently, you know, they play at the weekend against Manchester United with, I would say, their fourth and sixth choice central defensive options, possibly seventh choice, in that I don't know if we prefer Roberto Firmino to Reece Williams if it came right down to it at the heart of the defence. Wow. But ultimately, that's currently what we had to face Manchester United. The week before when we faced Manchester United, we had our fourth and fifth choice central defensive partnerships, who are our first and second choice holding midfielder. And ultimately, that's really killing the shape of the team and the approach, and has done. I was lucky enough, through a really odd set of circumstances, to end up in the ground against West Brom. And it really looked like a hammer blow to those players when Joel Matip went off injured. Just there and then, just everyone on the pitch just went into the shells. Like, it was just one kick in the teeth too many. Even though they were 1-0 up at the time, and it's a really strange thing, you know, because they were 1-0 up and they were relatively cruising at the time, but every single player on the pitch dropped off 20%. In the immediate aftermath of Matip going off injured, they were all stood around, they were all stood over him, and then they just all looked awful. And I think that there's just been that last little bit of resilience there, I think, did crumble, to be quite honest with you. And that last little bit of belief has been ever so slightly undermined. It's combined at the same time with the front three all at once being in the worst form, all three of them have been in at the same time in 3 years. It's the first time really where you can argue that all three of them have been actively quite poor in games at the same time. There was periods last season where only one of them was playing well or fully fit, in Mane or at one point Firmino. There was periods the year before, you know, it's, I think you've got to go back to 2018, spring of 2018, when all three of them were playing well and firing at the same time. But what's happened in the meantime is that if one's struggling a little bit, the other two are making it up. That's not been the case. So I think that the game against United at the weekend, the more recent one, I think that Liverpool were a lot better around the penalty area than they'd been the week before against United, and that's a good thing. They were genuinely poor the week before against United, but the overall team shape I thought was actually better in terms of approaching pressing against United at Anfield than it was against United at Old Trafford. But Liverpool showed a lot more wit and inspiration and creativity and dynamism around the penalty area against United at Old Trafford than they did at Anfield. So it's just giving it a little bit of time. The only way out to this is through. There's nothing else that they can do. You know, we can't stop the season. We can't cease playing football, though I think some Liverpool supporters would like to. And also, we can't change all the footballers, and nor should we. And we can't change the manager, and nor should we. So the only way out of this really is through. I'd like to see them invest in a central defender. I'd have took Sokratis, to be frank, because that place is where Liverpool currently are in terms of what the central defensive option is. There isn't, I don't think, a starting centre-half in the Premier League who I wouldn't right now have at Anfield, at least to be a squad option for some games where Joel Matip isn't fit and available. And that is a pretty damning state of affairs. But on the whole, I think that, you know, Liverpool just need to play games and need to play games back in themselves, and they need to find ways to enjoy this because that's stopped. And I think that that's the other thing that's sort of unspoken. You know, Jamie Carragher can do far better things on Sky than I can, talking about why Liverpool have got issues with the front three. But what I can see is a football team that just doesn't look like it's having a very nice time and hasn't looked like that for a while. And I understand why. And it's been 3 years of absolute graft, 12 months of absolute graft, and they've never had the rewards. They're the champions, but they've never been acclaimed onto the pitch as champions by an away crowd or by a home crowd. They've never had that moment of celebrating with supporters. It's not happened. That's deeply and profoundly sad. You can do the fist thing all you like, Gabriel. What I would say on that is that they've won the thing. You know, you can't take that away. It's in the record books. And they didn't just win it. They won it better than anybody else ever has. They won 26 of the first 27 league games. They absolutely kicked its head in. So you can't win it better. But what none of us have had, and it is really sad, and I think it's cheap to not think it's sad, is that I've never had a night out in a boozer beyond 11 o'clock where Liverpool have been champions. And that's mad. I've never gone dancing and Liverpool are champions. And that's mad. And that's really sad. And those players haven't had that moment and that relief. And that is, from a human point of view, in all seriousness, that's sad. I used to do jokes that, you know, Liverpool, I was nine when Liverpool last won the league. And I'd say, I've never had a pint as champions. I've never had sex as champions. I've never done this. I've never done that. You're still in a situation where, in all honesty, we haven't had our night out as champions altogether. And that's really sad when the footballers have done the thing. You know, yeah. It's one thing to slaughter Liverpool supporters because we say it's our year, et cetera, et cetera. But it was our year and we've never had that. And I think at the minute, this is a football team that looks like it's not had a night out as champions. It's not got to enjoy it. And I think that's really, really sad. And it's not something that I don't think should be taken lightly because there's a human element there.
I hear that. Ollie, maybe I'm an idiot, but I actually still think Liverpool, I'm still backing them to win this title. But
they'll finish ahead one of the Manchester clubs.
Yeah, I'm still back in Liverpool because I think they'll come through it. But I think their game against your club, is it Thursday they play Spurs? Is it Thursday? Yeah. Thursday. Do you smell blood? Because I think if Liverpool lose that game, I think then they're in big trouble. Is that a game you're almost expecting to win if Jose is serious about finishing the top four?
Well, first things first, if Neil is upset that he's never had a chance to celebrate a title, he wants to think about what it's like being a Spurs fan.
Okay. I'm just saying we've won one. We've won one and we haven't had the night out.
No, I'm not taking it away from you, Neil. I'm saying to you that I've never seen Spurs win a title in my life.
Yeah.
So, I don't even know what it feels like to see it happen on the TV. But anyway, again, as a Spurs fan, to be honest with you, you don't really go into any game thinking like that, Jordan. And if you knew anything about being a Spurs fan, even when all the cards are stacked in your favour, you don't go into a game against Liverpool thinking, this is our moment, we're going to beat them. Because that way lies deep, deep misery. And we've been through that so many times as Spurs fans that, no, I don't. I keep thinking with Liverpool that at some point, you know, they're going to come out of this slump. I was kind of thinking, well, you know, maybe at the weekend they'd get that win against Man United and they'd kind of turn things around. I would have probably been a bit more confident if they had have got a result somewhere along this run. But the fact they haven't had a result makes me more nervous than I probably would have been. I don't see it like that. The thing is with Liverpool have had an incredible couple of years and, you know, the injury thing, they've gone through a few years where they've had no injuries. They've had, you know, players who are playing. And the other thing that Klopp's done, which is quite amazing, is the fact that unlike Man City, unlike Chelsea to some extent, both, you know, Liverpool have relied on the same set of players doing it for them, doing it and doing it again. And, you know, especially that front three, until Jota came along, there wasn't really, apart from the odd cameos from Origi, there wasn't really anyone who was going to break those three up. And so he's relied on the same amount of players to do, you know, incredible things, you know, to win the Champions League, to win the league. And, you know, the luck's run out. To my mind, it seems like the luck's run out, or, you know, they've run out of steam to some extent. Some players are getting injured. Some players are breaking down. And not only that, but you've got a lot of clubs now, and it happens all the time when a team wins becomes champions. Everyone works doubly hard to work out how to stop them. And now you're looking at someone like Trent, who was always someone who was on the front foot. I'm looking at him now and he looks like he's seen a ghost. He looks like a player who is terrified of what's going on behind him a lot of the time. And so, you know, he's still a great player, don't get me wrong. But the fact is that I just feel that he's now worrying about the things he can't do rather than the things he can do. And so I think there are things like that where clubs have maybe started to look at different ways of beating. And you know, even Solskjaer's worked it out now. So that gives you an idea of where we're at.
I think the idea that Liverpool have been worked out, and I think it's a really interesting piece of language.
No, I'm not saying you're worked out.
But I think that some people are, though. And what I would say is that the season before, we were walking into games as European champions, having just got 97 points. Sides were playing a low block against us. I'm writing, pulling a book together from some stuff I did last year. And one of the things I wrote before we play Southampton at home on the 1st of February was I'm really looking forward to the game because there's a chance we might see a proper game at Anfield where Southampton come at us, because all that everyone's doing at the minute is sitting in against us and it's been a bit miserable. And I wrote that down then because the way the results have been going, and Liverpool was still getting results, and Southampton did come at us that day and we won 4-0. But on the idea of worked out, a phrase that's got two meanings. One is the idea that somebody has worked somebody out or something like that. But there's another bit of phraseology, and this concerns me much more, which is that we would refer to a seam, a gold seam in a gold mine, as eventually working itself out. That you can only get so much gold out of the seam, at which point the seam is worked out and you don't know what to do with it now. It's dead, it's finished. My genuine slight concern for Liverpool is they may have being worked out in that sense, that the seam may not quite have as much gold in it as it did. Not because of anything anyone else is doing, but just the simple repetition of it over and over and over again, that at some point things just stop working on an innate human level that we've seen with every
football. I think it's a fair point. Now, let me bring in Marvin now, because I think the Van Dijk thing is obviously massive, but I think, Marvin, the single biggest factor is that it's just fatigue. Liverpool have been operating at a high level for 3 seasons now. 3 years, pretty much, they've been operating at a really high level. and they're just knackered. I think they're knackered. I think yeah, the example that Neil mentions there, I think is valid. I think it's less about teams working them out. I just think they're effed. You played them on the weekend. What did you make of how Liverpool played in that game? Because they were better, but they still lost the game, ultimately.
I mean, I don't think United were great in that game either, to be honest, George. But I think the game itself is a crystallisation of where the two teams currently are, right? You know, United are grinding out results and getting just that little extra free kick or that extra goal, right? A bit like we did against Fulham with Pogba. And Liverpool, unfortunately for Neil, but to my absolute delight, are just struggling, regardless of how good they perform, to get the results that they need. One thing I will say, though, is I can't believe, and I'm being very polite because there's a lot of people on the call and Joe doesn't like people interrupting. I can't believe you said with a straight face, one of the reasons why Liverpool are in trouble is because you haven't had a night out as champions and you haven't had a beer as champions. Like, as far as I'm concerned, that I'm not buying, right? Like, as far as I'm concerned, you had a night out as Champions League champions. You've just talked about stepping out as Europe. I can't believe that's where you were going.
It's the wider point. What I'm saying is that, in general, what there hasn't been is that, as I say, one of the best things that happens, one of the things you do it for as a footballer, you get paid the money regardless, is the idea that you step onto the pitch in a key moment, the crowd reminds you, you're the champions of the Europe, you're the champions of the world, you're the champions of England. They haven't had that moment of communion with the supporters. We talk a lot about Klopp and the supporters. Klopp was ridiculed going right the way back to 2015 when he'd first joined. When we drew 2-2 with West Brom and he took the players to the Kop. And he took the players to the Kop and he got absolutely ridiculed when he did that. But part of what he was doing there was he was saying to the players, you play for them. And he was saying to the supporters, they'll give you everything. And that's it. We're in this together as a covenant. We haven't had that release together as a covenant, as a pairing. For this thing that we waited 30 years for, this thing we craved, this thing the season before where we lost it by a point to Manchester City, where they won every single game. And then they went out and they won 26 out of 27. It's inhuman to win 26 out of 27, but they did it. And they did it because of the way in which it felt when they had the bus parade around the city and a million people came and they wanted to make sure, and they treated every game like a cup final. And what they haven't had since is one moment of being able to look those supporters in the eye and go, here we are, we've done this. Isn't that amazing that we've done it all together? And I'm saying that I think it's hard to keep that motivation going and to keep that sheer passion and drive going through all of this, when you've not just done the thing that everyone wanted you to do, the first Liverpool team to do it for 30 years, but better than anybody else ever has or could have got near. Go and do it all again. Why? They're all trying their best, but that extra 1%, that spring in your step, that thing that gets you through the rough days. You haven't had a bus ride. You haven't had the trophy.
But you're playing shit because you haven't had an open top bus, is what you're saying.
I don't think we're playing all that shit.
But you're not playing all that shit, but you're definitely...
We've definitely lost a certain edge, and there's loads of reasons why, but when I'm
it's
saying...
It's more than a certain edge, though, right? It's more than a certain edge, because you're not scoring goals, and one of the things that you could bank on with Liverpool is... And I totally take the point. I think for everybody to be misfiring is a rarity, and to Ollie's point, there have been injuries, right? But a certain edge means, you know... You're winning games here and there, but overall you're losing the majority. I saw some stats where open play goals before you played us was a complete myth. For me, I think you're looking at it contextually, right? You've just talked about winning 26 out of 27 and stuff like that. You've got to say you're playing shit now. And maybe I'm just being, maybe it's semantics in terms of how you articulate it, right? But I mean, I watched you guys lose to Southampton, and it was a good Danny Ings goal and what have you, but losing to Burnley at home,
we were dreadful first half against Southampton. It's probably our poorest 45 minutes of the season. Burnley's a great example. They couldn't have gotten. I mean, the game against United was a really good example. You couldn't have got around the penalty area and in the penalty area more. First 30 minutes against United, Liverpool basically set up camp in the United box, but they can't make it happen. And I think that's just a little, as I say, just a little bit of this idea that they are worn down And I just, they don't at the minute come across. There's a decent enough piece today by Jonathan Liu, which I think overstates his case. But the idea that it stopped looking like fun for Liverpool is, I think, something that is there. It has stopped looking like fun for Liverpool. And that's
would things be different if Jota stayed fit, Neil? Because I think Klopp would have rotated him in a bit more, right?
I think he would have helped keep it fresh. And I think fresh is sort of what, that's why I think he's given Shaqiri more time than I would have expected, because Shaqiri helps keep it a bit fresher. So I think keeping it fresh, it's not being kept fresh for them.
And what about Thiago?
Hang on, sorry, Mark. Let me just move on to Klopp, because I want to keep Rafa on to just talk about Klopp. And this year he seems to be very rattled, and a lot of rival fans have been saying he's making excuses and he's having a go at the media, and he's been very, very catty. Have you seen a difference this year in Jurgen Klopp, and is that linked to Liverpool's drop off in form?
Well, he looks more animated on the touchdown than he did the last 2 years, but that's, of course, a reflection of the amount of coaching that he feels that needs to be done. The thing doesn't run itself right now. It's not going smoothly, so he feels he has to do more. Is he more touchy as a result? I'm not so sure. I mean, the thing that happened with Lampard is the best example. I mean, Liverpool had won the league at that point. The game had nothing riding on it. They still managed to get into an argument, but nobody said, oh, look, Klopp has rattled, because it wasn't an issue. They'd won the game, they'd won the league. No one made the point. I think people are looking for connections and narratives that are not necessarily there. What is true, though, is that when you see Klopp very animated during the game, and I'm not talking about, you know, talking to opposition managers, it often shows you that he's unhappy with what's happening. And right now, there's a lot of shouting at at Trent in particular. I mean, there's always shouting at the fullbacks.
What are you saying there? Terence Trent Derby?
Yes, always. They always shout at the fullbacks anyway, because they happen to be the closest to the coaches. They're the guy with a short straw. But the fullbacks are not working for Liverpool. You can go through the whole team, and individually, no one's quite playing at the same level they did before. And there's not a lot to do about it, because the team is very thin at the moment. And I'm not sure, and I think I had this discussion, was it with you, Neil, even? I can't remember, but I'm not sure that Liverpool played that much better last season. There were a lot of games that they won 1-0 or 2-0. You know, they did what necessary, but it's a huge difference if you win 1-0 or you lose 1-0. The actual difference on the pitch was just one goal, and you might have not created more in one game than the other, but you got the result, and then it looks professional, looks brilliant. But it's a long-winded way of saying, I'm not sure Liverpool are quite as bad as the results are, but because they're not very good, they're more susceptible to getting unlucky and not to getting over the line, because they don't dominate games and they can easily find ways of having bad results.
Liverpool from the start of the 2019 season through until, I would say, possibly about, let's say, November of this season, were the best team I'd ever seen at 1-0 in either direction. 1-0 down or 1-0 up, Liverpool were absolutely brilliant. And that's very much disappeared. So the game against United last weekend's a really good example. There's so much that's wrong. There's a great ball from Rashford in it, and a good ball from Van der Beek, and a really good finish from Greenwood. But there's loads of little things that are wrong with what Liverpool do in the run-up to that ball, ended up in the back of the net. To do it in reverse order, Milner gets stuck underneath it. At that point, nobody pressed Rashford. Neither Trent nor Salah pressed Rashford. Firmino and Wijnaldum's bit of interplay is absolutely ridiculous. And what no one does is what they should do, which is just stamp on Van der Beek so that a free kick's given away. And none of those things are major errors by any stretch of the imagination, but they're all errors that are 1% errors. If you're 1% better, one of those things doesn't happen. And I think that all of that, Liverpool, that to me is arguably the most concerning part. Liverpool are 1-0 up against Tottenham. Yes, they go on and eventually win the game 2-1, but they're 1-0 up against Tottenham and they are cruising. And it only takes 1 second and it all goes badly wrong in the 1-1. The 1-0 up against West Bromwich Albion. The 1-0 down against Southampton, and they never look like scoring. And last season when Liverpool were 1-0 down, you were waiting for them to get one back. And part of this season, when Liverpool have been 1-0 up in games, they've found a really nice way. They were 1-0 down against against West Ham and against Sheffield United, and they win both of those games 2-1. And I think that that's what's eroded. Liverpool have been for a long time absolutely brilliant at 1-0 in either direction. And at the moment, they're really, really poor at 1-0. And they don't quite know how to play it because they go at United at Old Trafford at 1-0. There's a really strong argument. You just go and take 1-0 at half-time and sit on the edge of your own box. And you know, you think about the Champions League final against Tottenham. Liverpool go 1-0 up. They have a little bit of a foray for 5 minutes. And then they think, nah, it's too hot. We'll just go and play back here and let Tottenham try their best. That sort of decision-making is what sort of ebbed away from this side. It can't work out when it needs to put its foot on the throat. It can't work out when it needs to ease off. It can't get its game management quite right. And within that, as Rafa says, it doesn't help that there's a lot of footballers not making great decisions, not being quite right. And there's not a lot of wiggle room for the manager because he's ultimately mostly playing his fit lads.
I just want to ask one final question to all the guys, but just before I ask it, Neil, just briefly, I respect the fact that Liverpool don't seem to panic too much when it comes to making signings. They know who they want. If they have to wait, they'll wait. In this instance, in trying to hang on to your Premier League title, would you advocate Liverpool just get in any two centre-backs now to try and limp to the end of the season? Or would you rather, look, if we finished second, third, fourth, as we currently are, but we get the guy we want in the summer, then so be it.
When Sokratis signed for Olympiacos, it was a hammer blow to my plexus.
Mm.
There's your answer.
Okay.
For 6 months, if Liverpool could pull deals together, and I would only want it to be, I'm fine with two short-term measures, to be quite honest with you. And I would look to do two, not least because what you do if one doesn't work. But also, I think one of the things that has helped Liverpool massively would be able to pick Fabinho back in midfield for a period. If Liverpool could pick a midfield three of Fabinho, Henderson and Thiago or Wijnaldum for a period of time, I think things would look a lot better. I think getting Henderson back in there and Fabinho back in there would help. I'd love Liverpool to find two diddles. The problem with that, though, is the price of centre-halves. You know, James Tarkowski, in football as it was, Liverpool can make an £8 million offer to Burnley for James Tarkowski. He agitates, he goes, he comes and plays for Liverpool. Right now he's rated that he'd take £40 million to prize him away. You know, it's almost not fair on James Tarkowski because he could have 18 months playing for the Champions and in the Champions League. But as it is, he's not worth that and he's not worth Liverpool rushing that sort of thing. I'd love us to find a way through. I'd take Mustafi from Arsenal. I would have Mustafi right now. I think he'd help.
Whoa. I know things are bad, Neil, at Liverpool, but...
Would you take Phil Jones? We've got a Phil Jones.
I'd take Phil Jones. I think that, you know, I genuinely think Liverpool right now, and this is not a comparison between the quality of the footballers, Liverpool right now would be 4 points clear at the top of the Premier League if they'd have bought Ben Godfrey and not Thiago Alcantara. That's the truth of the matter. Liverpool be 4 points clear at the top if they'd have bought Ben Godfrey and not Thiago Alcantara. Liverpool sold Dejan Lovren and in the squad replaced him with a fullback who we haven't seen kick it in a meaningful game yet in Tsimikas. We're in a situation where we are genuine. Like last summer, one of the signings of the summer with the current centre-half market the way it is. And I said so at the time because you've only got to look at where centre-halves are at the minute and how many of them are and how good they are. Was Smalling going to Roma for 13 million quid? It's a brilliant move by Roma because Smalling's a really good centre-half who can play on the team.
Oh, don't sit off Marvin. You're gonna make Marvin start talking rubbish again.
Well, he's right. But also, there aren't that many. Like, Liverpool shouldn't have let Lovren go without a genuine centre-half replacement lined up. And one of the things that's been proven right this season, a lot of Liverpool supporters have wanted Lovren to go for a significant period of time and have wanted Andy Robertson to be backed up and have thought that Jurgen Klopp and Michael Edwards were managing the squad badly by having additional central defenders and central midfielders and not enough cover and fullback. Well, guess what? Jurgen Klopp and Michael Edwards of 17, 18 and 18, 19 and 19, 20 were right. And the ones this year are wrong because you need quality at the heart of your defence. You need strength and depth at the heart of your defence and you can make do and mend at fullback. I would take, there is no end to the list. I'd have, what's his name? Kevin Long from Burnley. Is he called Kevin Long? I don't even know if that's his name.
I never know his name.
I'd have the lad called Kev from Burnley.
I was genuinely confused as to who that was.
Whoever he is, that lad at Burnley.
Whoever, I love him.
They've got Jimmy Dunn and Kevin Long, and it feels like they've been created by sort of generators and simulators. But I'd take either of them.
Listen, Gabriel, Thomas Tuchel is at Chelsea now. Do Liverpool get top four?
Yeah. I think they do, you know. I think they'll be all right in the end. I think it's a little bit...
He's asked that question, G, because he's trying to find out if they get top four at Chelsea's expense. Like, can Tuchel get you top four?
No. I asked the question because, you know, let's hope, let's assume Chelsea get better. My mob, Arsenal, West Ham and Everton are on the rise.
Whoa. Come on, George. Come on.
West Ham won again today, didn't they?
Yes, they did. I'm serious. So you think Liverpool get top four this year?
I think Liverpool get top four and quite comfortably as well.
Okay. Rafa?
Yes, okay. They will. Can I just say on the centre-back issue and the strengthening issue, I think something that I had to kind of learn myself is I think coaches look at it a little bit differently. I think fans, supporters and the media think a new player coming in is strengthening the team. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
You add something that you don't have. Coaches think, if this guy isn't quite the same level of what I've got already, I'm ruining my dressing room here.
Yep.
Because I'm giving him a chance of someone in ahead of someone else who I think is better. I'm basically not backing my own judgment, bringing this guy in. This is a very bad move. And if he works, then I still have 3 years with him on a contract where he's taking the space away from me for another guy. So I think the smartest clubs, and I would include Liverpool in that any time, have worked out that those panic buys and those, you know, just get a body in. The price that you pay might be not so readily identifiable, but it's not worth paying.
99 times out of 100, I agree with you, and I agree with that. 99 times out of 100, I would argue that right now, unless there are things I don't know about Joe Gomez, or for that matter, Joel Matip's fitness, we are in the one time out of 100. And I would just like Tomori's gone on loan to AC Milan. Could Liverpool have done something there? Probably not. Chelsea would have been daft to have, but this is the one time out of 100 where I think Liverpool could just do with... Normally, most of the time, it's very difficult
to say. But, Nia, sorry. What has Tomori done? What has he done to make you comfortable to think this guy is ready to play for the best team or one of the best teams, not just in the Premier League, but in the in Europe as well? And he's not just going to be now the guy on the bench. Because what is the point?
He's played at a significantly higher level prior to this season than Reece Williams and Nat Phillips.
Neil, and just to be clear, you were joking about Phil Jones, right? Surely, like no. to everything Rafa said, right, about proving the harmony of the team. I think you side of Phil Jones and those two youngsters that you just referred to, they're going to be on the phone to their agent, but personally, that would damage them severely. And to the point, and I don't think you've had that 8-2 moment that Arsenal had, right? But you remember when United did Arsenal 8-2, I think they went and got, Mertesacker, Santos, Arteta. It was like, let's get everybody we can in, right? I don't think...
Last season, Reece Williams played against Mr. Harris.
It pains me to say this to you, but don't panic, right?
No.
It's not that bad, right? And like, you were not talking like, fair enough, Burnley or whatever, right? And to your point, I don't know how serious Gomez and Matip, like how long-term their injuries are, right? But I just think for Liverpool at the moment, from what I'm seeing, and I know you're a lot closer to it, I think it's a confidence issue, right? I think you only need one sort of scrappy 1-0 for people to start finding their feet again, right? And for you to sit there with a straight face and name the players that you would take in, I think is a bit panicked. And no, for me to telling you to calm down is a big thing.
If you said to me Joel Matip will be fit for every game from now until the end of the season, I'd say absolutely fine, don't do anything. But Joel Matip, it's repeatedly said, can't play three games in a week. And if we're going to get far in the Champions League and still challenge for the title / top four, there's going to be a lot of times we're going to play three games with something riding on it in a week. So how fit is Joe Gomez? If Joe Gomez isn't going to get back before April, all that could be over and done with by then. Last season, and this isn't slaughtering the lads, because it's so rare you see a teenager play top-level football at the heart of a defence, and he has to be a prodigy. I think Reece Williams could end up being a bottom-half Premier League regular standard player. Nat Phillips is 23, a Haitian to battle. He spent last season on loan at Stuttgart, who were in the German second tier. Liverpool are in a situation, genuinely. Last season, Reece Williams was playing for Kidderminster Harriers, and he's starting at Old Trafford in the fourth round of the FA Cup. And I'm all for giving youth a chance. And if that was an isolated thing, but we go to Tottenham, and if Joel Matip picks up another knock, having come back from injury, the game after that, we then have West Ham, where Mikel Alt-Antonio will have Reece Williams on absolute toast over and over and over again. And this is what you're dealing with. As I say, this isn't some sort of, you know, there are legit... It can sound like it's panic. My point is that Liverpool at the minute, I think, are going into games and they're either playing Jordan Henderson at the heart of the defence, at which point they're weakening midfield massively, next to Fabinho, who's the best, theoretically the best holding midfielder in the world. So they're doing that, or alternatively, they find themselves in a situation where they have to play someone who last season was playing for Kidderminster Harriers. I'd like it if, you know, I wouldn't be saying this if I thought that those footballers were there or thereabouts. It's, you know, when you talk, one of the reasons there's a lack of confidence, one of the reasons Trent's struggling, you said before, it's like he's panicked with what's next to him. Yeah, because he knows the standard of the player who's next to him. He knows what the player's capable of, and that's the problem. I take Rafa's point in that, and Liverpool have done brilliantly and not saddling themselves with any problems, and it might be that it's impossible to get anyone in where you wouldn't have to still be dealing with them in 2.5 years' time, so I take that point, but this is the time to get someone in for 4 months who can help matters. That's all it is. Just help matters and get you through 4 months. Because if not, you know, Liverpool, I still think Liverpool can win the league. If Joel Matip played every game from now to the end of the season, I think we'd be the best team in the country.
Neil, but the thing is, I'm not disagreeing with you at all, but I'm just trying to remind you who Phil Jones is. And the thing is, when you say Phil Jones, that's a panic, right? It's Phil Jones, Neil. This guy spends more time on the floor making faces than he's like. He is in the doldrums of the United camp. This is not the answer to where you are. Now, fair enough, if you go for Ben Mee or even Dunk, obviously I know we're talking big money, right? But yeah. I'm telling you, there are levels to this, and Phil Jones is not the level we're talking about. I'm not even sure Phil Jones would start at Kidderminster, right? So
I'm just trying to level set you here, right?
Don't panic. It's not that bad yet, right?
And to be fair, even Rafa made a face when you said Mustafi. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, Mustafi is a very, very decent centre-back. I mean, he's not terrible, but I wouldn't like to see him in the high line. I wouldn't like to see him in the high line.
Fair enough. Neil, I'm being provocative, but having said all that, you still think Liverpool will finish top four next season?
Yeah, I think we'll... I think we'll finish ahead of one of the Manchester clubs.
Okay. Ollie, Liverpool top four? Confident?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
There's no problem with that.
Yeah, yeah, I think they'll comfortably make top four as well. I mean, I'm not even ready to rule them hand on heart out of the race yet. I've definitely ruled Chelsea out the race, G, just in case you want to go back to that conversation. And to be honest, I've not actually ruled myself in yet, but Liverpool aren't out of it yet. The season is manic, it's topsy-turvy, right? We don't know if we're going to have fans in before the end of the season. There's so many unknowns. To rule anyone out just because of a bad patch, I think, would be a bit naive. It's not looking great for them, but, you know, I think... As I said earlier, with a scrappy win and a bit of form, anything can happen. I mean, Arsenal are beating Southampton away at the moment, right? Like, stranger things have happened.
All right, mate. All right. Bloody hell, Marv.
Don't make that face, George. You've been dog shit for ages. Southampton are a decent team, so I'm saying results will surprise you.
All right.
Like, don't guarantee a United win against Sheffield United tomorrow.
I'm not. Listen, Neil and Rafa, thanks for coming on the pod this week. Some really good insight into Chelsea's new man and what's happening at Liverpool there as well. Marv, Ollie, G, thank you very much as per usual. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and all the usual Apple and Spotify outlets, all that goodness. All the socials, Twitter, Instagram and Facebook as well. You know what to do. Leave a comment, share the ting. Till next time, we'll see you next time. Peace.
Neil, come down to London. We'll have a lock-in at 11:05.